C1PR. Number 11B.
Well, then you can't help but be grateful for it. To get to the second step, you see, your approach to it, you can't help but begin to be grateful for life, truth, and love. And you are just grateful for life, truth, and love. And you begin just to be, not because you think you have to be grateful for it, but because it's just there. And it lifts away some wonderful burden, because it says all that matters is that life is pouring forth more than we expect, that truth is doing the right and the best thing I can ever think out at the moment, and is working out a plan of which I can't even dream of it. Why, then I just be grateful for it. And then what happens, you see, is now I come back to the worshipping and gratitude. And what happens is that that law begins to work further and says, that brings growth, that brings spiritual growth, that brings you further, and one gets the feeling, oh, these last few weeks have been a wonderful progress. All these last few weeks, I wouldn't give them away for anything for having what I have done. And I get a sense of progress and a sense of new birth, of regeneration. You see how we would find the wonderful law of birth, of spiritual growth. Quite a different thing than to say, well, mind is the creator and spirit develops and soul makes it definite. Well, that's true, but how? But how? How do we experience it? How it is life to us? And here, I think prayer gives us the answer. I'm very anxious to go on and see how it unfolds. Now, look here, for instance, how is it with Hanna? You know who Hanna was, the wife of Eli, of Elkanah. Hanna, you say. See, Hanna was barren. That's how the book of Samuel starts. She was barren. Well, it's that point where we say, I'm in trouble. Something doesn't go as it should, and it's fruitless. My life is fruitless. Prayer is nothing else but the answer to the big question, my life is fruitless, what have I to do, that it is not fruitless. That's the answer to the question, well, what I'm doing here in life? My life is just all rotten. What can I do about it? Well, Hannah was barren, and what did she do? It said she went to pray. She took the attitude of prayer. What did she pray, and how did she pray? She used that first law quite definitely. It is said that she was praying earnestly all day. I mean, it was just a sense of the earnestness and deepness, and how she was oblivious to everything that went on around her. That was a deep, loving, fervent desire. And she was praying to God. Seek, you see, you get now that deep desire to God. And it is said that she gave in her prayer everything to God. She said, if I ever should have a child, I give it to you. She has that wonderful sense to say, well, all what I want is really God and not the child. And everything God gives is God and belongs to God. And then the high priest Eli came and said, whatever you have prayed for, that will come to happen. It will be done. You see, she got the promise. Chose that law of if we desire earnestly, if we have that attitude of the 1, 2, 3 in the scriptural note and put that into the first subject of prayer and earnestly long for that, that there will be a promise in the cloud. The promise. Just a promise. Nothing has happened more than a promise. But that's already wonderful. What did she do as the second? She used exactly the same law as Mrs. Elish presents in the second prayer. Namely, it is said that she went and worshipped God. And after she had worshipped God, she conceived and bare a child. See, she shows there again the same law as here, that worshipping our vision or worshipping our promise high and deep, that regenerates something in us. That something in us is being born and we bear a child. But then it's out of us. It's not an adopted child. Then it is something which has been born out of a wonderful divine law. And it isn't a child which we have just told us that we would have it, just told us the laws of metaphysics, but we have gone through the laws of metaphysics. And then she goes on in the third, again, as she shows, Mrs. Eddy shows then in the third law, that being, that sticking to that child and sticking to that vision, that perseverance of soul, that changes and changes everything. How Hannah persevering and weaning away the child from all materiality and keeping it 3 years to the point of soul and not giving it away, that did change everything, that the barren became fruitful and the fruitful became barren, that all was turned and turned and overturned. It's a wonderful song of soul which says, oh yes, those who stick to that order, who stick to that rule, those experience a wonderful reformation, a wonderful turning and overturning and overturning. The third rule which she will show in the third chapter, in the third chapter. So here, see, that's one illustration out of the Bible which fits very wonderfully into this law. Now, we should go on to the main subject. I just see that time is flying, and would you mind if we would take tomorrow, soul tomorrow, so that I can spend a little bit more time on spirit today? Or would you rather like tomorrow to go right on with the next option? Well, whatever we do, there is nothing to hurry. I only know one thing, and that the beginning of the chapter on prayer is a wonder. Just that I think afterwards will be a wonder. But I know one thing, that unless we digest what is presented here slowly so that it becomes more and more us, we will chemicalize when we come to Atonement and Eucharist. Or we will not chemicalize, but it will leave no impress on us. Because Atonement and Eucharist is built on the chapter on prayer. But it is not built on a knowledge of the chapter on prayer. It's built on the essence, the living essence of the chapter on prayer. And unless we reflect and assimilate to some extent the chapter on prayer, the chapter on Atonement and Eucharist can give us a lot of trouble because it's demanding a lot of us. But if we have a better sense and a deeper sense and a living sense and a warm sense of the chapter on prayer, then the chapter on Atonement and Eucharist is just wonderful. It's just so sturdy and so strong and such a strength to us, but only then. So I don't want to hurry too much on the chapter on prayer. And experience of last year and so, when I presented the subject in Switzerland, just tells me not to hurry over the first chapter. We won't lose anything if we take the chapter on prayer deeply and earnestly and sincerely. We should be a new man already after the first few talks. A real new man. We should feel a newness of life. So that gives me a little bit the right to take it slowly. Now, the main tone of... No, we stop here. No? All right, we go on a little bit. The main tone of spirit, the question 16, what is the main tone epitome? How could we epitomize that second subject? Well, perhaps we could say it is the prayer of true worship or the prayer of true devotion. We could perhaps enlarge it a bit and say it is the prayer of true worship or true devotion through expressing divine qualities, through reflecting spiritual qualities. That's perhaps, in some words, the tone. Whatever your wording is, doesn't matter, there will be individuals. But the tone of it is this, that in the first, you see, one always gets a better sense of a subject if one considers it in relation to the preceding subject. Because they always should be the natural outflow of the preceding subject. The preceding subject of mind told us, you seek and you will find. Seek God in His bigness, in His allness, in His infinitude, in His unchangeableness, and that will give you a big promise. Now, the second subject comes and says, but are you going to leave that promise outside of you? Or are you going to reflect that promise in you? Do you take that promise, so to say, into you? That's only symbolically natural. But do you harbor it in your heart? Do you love it with your heart? And so we feel here that it is a subject which tells that we should worship our vision, that we should love our vision, our promise. We should love it. We just should feel mighty blessed that we have the biggest promise that can be given, the promise of the infinitude and allness and the signs of God. Now, what are we going to do with it? And the second subject says, well, do you give to that promise your first place in your heart, your uppermost chamber in your being? Do you give to it consecration, love, patience, and so on? Do you worship, inwardly adore that promise? And it shows that as we adore this infinite promise, that adorable one, as we adore it, as we worship it, something is going to give birth in us. The divine law does it. We don't have to give it birth. We don't have to say how it should give birth to us and when it should give birth to us. It does give birth in us. We just won't be able to stop it, that as we use this law, that something in us is going to grow in a wonderful, mighty way. And we'll feel it tangibly. We'll feel it tangibly. But then it is, as in the Bible it is always said, then it comes from one's own loins. It is being born out of one's own inward attitude. It isn't the adopted child that is going to be born. That adopted child which we are tempted to have as long as we only listen to these talks. As long as we listen to these talks and are satisfied with knowing where mind is mind and mind is spirit and mind is soul start and end, as long as we do that, we have an adopted child. We get an adopted child because we think we have one and we haven't. It's not our child. Nothing has been born yet to us. The second subject comes and shows the first step of a new birth in us. Wonderful new birth in us. Which says, worshipping spiritually brings forth something and we just can't help it. That's the law that seems to pervade this subject. Now, we come to the subtone epitomes, question 17. Now, how does Mrs. Eddy show the structure of this worship? And we could ask here all sorts of questions. And so, in order to get a better view, I just go quickly through the main